Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Charlotte's crown jewel, its tree canopy, is facing serious challenges. First of those challenges is the age of our trees. Many of those majestic towering oaks are nearing the end of their life cycles. And those trees, along with lots of their younger neighbors, have gone through Hurricane Hugo, years of drought, plagues of cankerworms, occasional windstorms, and now Hurricane Florence. There was considerable worry in advance of that storm about the potential of significant tree loss. By this Monday afternoon, the city had received nearly 500 requests for workers to come out and deal with downed trees and limbs from that storm. But in truth, some trees fell before the worst of the storm arrived. All these factors, plus encroaching development, has caused this city of trees to begin to worry about how much longer we can use that name. In fact, a report to City Council last year said that the tree canopy was on track to shrink even more over the next three decades. And that has provoked us to get a health report on our canopy and on the trees that contribute to what we've considered to be one of our distinguishing characteristics. Tim Porter is with us. He's the arborist for the city of Charlotte. Welcome back. Nice to see you again.
Thank you. Nice to see you.
And he is here along with Mike Davis, who is the director of engineering and property management for the city of Charlotte. And you work along with the arborist in terms of what, landscaping and things like that?
That's true. So landscaping operations are a part of what we do every day. And everything we build includes trees and taking care of the trees.
Okay. Well, thank you for being here, too.
Thank you.
So did I paint this picture correctly, Mr. Tree Man? Are we facing big challenges with our canopy?
I think you did a good job. Yeah, we are. It's in a city like Charlotte that's growing and becoming more and more urban. There's, along with weather that's changing. So there's a lot of things on the horizon that are affecting our canopy.
So you have a pretty good handle, I would think, on the trees that are on public property.
Absolutely. You
don't handle trees on private property, but
no.
Rights of way and places like that. You probably had a pretty good handle about which trees are the healthiest and which trees are the not so healthy. Prior to Florence's arrival, when we were still talking about major wind and lots of rain, were you concerned? How concerned were you?
I was very concerned. As you know, the projections were for significant wind and rain, and we were concerned there'd be hundreds or possibly thousands of downed trees and tree debris all over the city. So we were preparing across the organization to make sure we could be ready for that. And I'm just very glad that it was a much smaller wind and rain event, but still large enough to make a significant impact on our canopy.
And yet trees did begin to fall before the brunt of the worst of the storm arrived.
Yep.
What does that tell you?
Right now, anytime that we see wind sustained over 15 miles an hour, we know that there's going to be at minimum a handful of trees falling or limbs falling because our canopy is so robust. You know, we have one of the largest, if not the largest, tree canopy coverages of any major city. So the volume of trees out there is significant. And any wind that's 15 mile an hour or greater is going to bring down something.
Given the fact that our tree canopy is shrinking and it's projected to shrink, mm-hmm. as I said in the opening, 30 over the next three decades, shrink even more, how much longer can we brag about our having the most tree canopy of any major city in the country?
I think we can keep bragging. We're going to have to keep assessing, though, and make sure that our goals, our tree canopy goals for the community, for city council, for this organization, are in lockstep with other areas. So those goals may change over time, but I think we can continue to do that if we work together to have goals that are connected.
You can't engineer a tree.
That's true.
But you are an engineer, so I would assume, correct me if I'm wrong, that your job is to help decide where new trees go and what kinds of trees they are. No, you're saying no.
So the big picture role of a city engineer is to think a lot about how we build cities and all the parts that make up mm-hmm. Key infrastructure. And so I'm also a native Charlottean. I sort of have an appreciation for the role that trees play, not just in how we build a city, but in how people feel about it. So as we are urbanizing and growing and preparing for more growth, we're all of the time trying to figure out how do we take care of what we have? How do we figure out where the space is to plant new and make sure that trees are just part of how future citizens continue to think about Charlotte?
And we're going to talk later about money involved in all this, because evidently, and this actually, we talked about this, I think, once before when you were here, Tim, the city's underfunded when it comes to trees. And we'll talk about that, because if we really want to be a city of trees and we really care about the tree canopy, we're not putting enough money into it. But we'll talk about it. How many trees did we lose?
It's tough to say.
Of Florence.
It's tough to say, Mike. We had the third largest 911 emergency tree call volume on record. So our approach usually looks at cleanup sites. So it's not a great 100% equal gauge of the number of trees, but we certainly lost hundreds.
I read this morning in the paper, actually, I knew it yesterday, that you received an overwhelming, that's the words you guys are using, overwhelming volume of emergency tree requests. Are people supposed to call 911 if a tree comes down?
Absolutely.
They are?
Absolutely, yeah.
And you don't deal with the trees that come down in people's front and backyards, do you? You only deal with the trees that would come down in rights of way and along sidewalks.
For the most part, that's absolutely correct. Now, occasionally, unfortunately, we'll have a city tree that's growing in the public right of way, a street tree, if you will, that will fall the other way, unfortunately, towards private property on houses. So in those cases, they're very rare, but we do work with property owners to manage that situation. But by and large, you're right. Just anything that's blocking the public right of way.
You were, since you're a native, you were here during Hugo.
That's true,
Mike. And people who were not here, I'm sorry to keep going back to Hugo when we talk about Florence, but people who were not here before Hugo don't understand what happened when all those trees came down along Queens Road and elsewhere in the city. It was devastating psychologically.
Sure.
In addition to property and just the look of the neighborhood. Have most of those trees come back? I mean, or have we just gotten used to not seeing as many of these towering trees along those?
So I was a kid when Hurricane Hugo came through, and it did make an impression on me in terms of how we thought about preparing for this event. And of course, we're grateful that what ultimately materialized in terms of Florence doesn't really compare with what we saw in terms of Hugo. So I don't know how to answer your question about have the trees come back. Tim may have better insights on that. Again, we're grateful.
Well, those trees were old trees, so it takes 100 years, doesn't it?
Well, you can still see some of the damage from that storm, which was 1989, I believe. Yeah. But the canopy recovered. It certainly has been affected. That damage stays with the canopy, and the trees grow a certain way in response. So,
right.
Not all the gaps were filled, but most of them were. But we also have a new age class of trees that are older now, 100 years old, and that's where we're seeing some of the more bigger concerns during storm events like Florence.
So we got a lot of rain. What did we get, 7.9 inches of rain or something like that?
Generally between 5 and 10 inches, depending on which part of the city you're in.
So that really oversaturates the soil, and trees have to cling to the soil to stay upright.
That's correct.
Absolutely. In the absence of wind with such saturated soil, which I've seen described as quicksand, can trees still continue to fall this week because they've just got nothing to hang on to?
Yes. The short answer is yes. It's a structural stability issue. The trees are growing in soil, and they need that soil to be solid, to grip and hold themselves up. So when that soil changes to be less stable, that changes the dynamics. It's really a physics thing. When all these forces are acting on a tree, when the tree's ability to push back against those forces is overwhelmed, a healthy tree could be overwhelmed by a little wind but really saturated soil.
Can you do anything about that at this stage? I mean, the soil is wet. You can't go out there with a hairdryer and dry it out.
No, there's really little you can do. And we ask people to be tree aware prior, during, and after storms to look for red flags. Is there a part of the tree that should be green that's not green? Are there mushrooms growing near a tree? Watch your tree, because sometimes they're weakened during the storm, Mike, and afterwards. Right now we had 50 requests yesterday for trees that fell, and there was almost no wind and there was no rain,
right.
But the soil was still wet and trees were still falling, blocking roads, falling on houses.
So we got this record rainfall in Florence, and we've talked about over the years the impact of drought on trees. Is there a short or long-term impact on too much water at one given time on a tree in its root system?
There can be. Trees need water, of course, to grow, but too much water can be a problem, certainly for the soil, but if the soil stays saturated, roots essentially will drown. They need oxygen to survive, and the dynamics of the soil from a chemistry perspective change. So roots can be suffocated, and when you have a large tree that has a root system that's been impacted, you start seeing symptoms above ground, where the underground component, which is needed for life, is reduced. So absolutely, it can reduce the health of the tree, which then will in turn reduce the structural stability of a tree.
And were most of the trees that were affected, impacted, that fell or lost significant portions of their limb structure, were they diseased trees or were they perfectly healthy trees that just couldn't withstand the storm?
Generally, I would say most of them had some defect. We saw the most trees fall when the rain hit heavily. So the wind was blowing for a couple days, but then the rain came in, and that rain added weight to trees that had some problems. So part of a tree that was dead, if rain gets in there, it's like a sponge. It soaks it up. Now you have more weight, more density. The tree can't hold itself up as strongly because the soil is saturated. All those dynamics add up to the perfect soup of trees that are less structurally sound, and yeah, they started falling.
Mike Davis is here. He's the Director of Engineering and Property Management for the city, and you talked about getting ready for this storm. How do you get ready for a storm like this with regard to trees?
Yeah, so I'll speak from my sort of firsthand perspective here, and the first thing I would say is Charlotte is not new to dealing with events that cause tree issues. So we can see it through a hurricane event like we've just had, but I was interested in seeing some of the information from the 2002 ice storm, which is a major event that caused a lot of tree loss from a totally different kind of event. And so part of what I took in was just the regular day-to-day operational capabilities that our landscape management group that Tim oversees can do in any kind of event. They're used to it in summer storms. So as I mentioned, Hurricane Hugo makes an impression, and I just recall just trees everywhere. And so part of what I remember from that event was it becomes an all-hands-on-deck kind of situation, and when we see the community come out and do things to help in whatever ways they can. And what I've seen from the city side and part of what the preparation involved was just figuring out where we had resources inside the city that could help in ways that were different than what they normally do. And so for us, that included a lot of support from our solid waste services teams who, instead of going out on trash collection routes, were lending us their equipment and helping us clear logs and trees as Tim's guys were cutting things up. And we also had CDOT riding around with us and helping do some of that same debris removal. So it's just sort of coordinating resources that maybe needed to think about their work a little differently that day.
How busy have you been?
Very busy. We are very busy, Mike. Yes. So sympathy for Tim and all of his guys. We really want to support what they're going to be doing over the next couple weeks, because for many of us, we're feeling grateful. We feel like we dodged a bullet. And we're able to talk about it now like it's already happened, but there's a lot of guys riding down there doing high hazard work, trying to get the city kind of cleaned up. And so we ask for patience, and if you see one go by, say thank you if you get a chance to these guys.
Because the folks in Wilmington who got the brunt of this and places down east got the brunt of this, they're going through what we went through, and it took months, almost a year, maybe 2 years, to get through all of the damage and the tree removal and the debris from Hugo. We don't have that this time with Florence. But I do want to talk about these massive trees that we have and the shock. The first time I saw one that had come down, I was shocked at how little root structure it seemed to have as it lay on its side. We're going to talk about that when we come back with Tim Great. Porter, who's the city arborist, and Mike Davis, who's the Director of Engineering and Property Management for the city of Charlotte. And we'll talk about how to spot disease in your trees, because you're responsible for the trees on your lawn. It's Charlotte Talks. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about our tree canopy, which is threatened by a lot, and challenged is a better word to use, by lots of different forces, be it drought or cankerworms or storms or wind or rain or whatever, disease, which we'll talk about. With Tim Porter, he's the city arborist for the city of Charlotte. Mike Davis is here, Director of Engineering and Property Management for the city of Charlotte. as I was saying just before the break, the first time I saw one of these great big trees come down, these oak trees, these towering oak trees, I was shocked to see how little root system that tree seemed to have. I thought it would have this enormous taproot that would be, I don't know, as tall as the tree was, but it went down. And I have read that the root system of a tree is usually about three times the diameter of the canopy of the tree, correct?
Yeah, it can be.
So why, when these things come down, is it just this tiny little ball of root? Is that what's holding it up?
No, there used to be more in most cases. So depending on where that tree grows, if it's a street tree, on one side it might hit curb, asphalt.
So it can't grow anymore.
The root's got nowhere to go. So when it falls on that side of the tree, there never was much to begin with. But if a tree's healthy and growing for decades, its extensive root system will be way into people's front yards. It'll be, you know, like you said, three times the size of the canopy. However, as trees age, you know, they're living organisms, they have health problems, and root rot is one of the biggest causes of why these larger oak trees fall.
And what causes that?
It's a fungus. It's a fungal pathogen that comes in. The tree's probably weaker in its health, and that fungus will attack the roots, essentially decay, eat the roots away. So a large tree may need only one or two large roots to pump life up into it. But structurally, it needs many more. So sometimes when those trees fall, you're right, there's not much holding that thing up. But there used to be an extensive root system. And what you see sometimes when they fall is just the decayed remnants of that.
Can you spot root rot before the tree falls? Can you do anything about it if you know that it's there?
Once it's there, there's not much you can do. It's more of a on-the-clock situation. But there are signs and symptoms you can look for. Generally, root rot will show signs above ground as well. So if the roots are dying, then there's not enough to pump life into the tree. So you may see a tree that was nice and healthy the year before, but this summer, stuff's dying back. That could be a sign. If that canopy that should be green and lush right now is not, and you can't figure out why. There's also, you see these weird, funky mushrooms growing at the base of a tree. Doesn't always mean that something's wrong, but it could be an indication that that fungal pathogen is just eaten away underground, and you see those mushrooms above.
Well, Teresa on Facebook had a question about that. Can you explain why mushrooms around a tree matter?
Because they are the sign and symptom of the larger fungal organism that's underground eating away roots. Now, not every mushroom is a bad mushroom, but if it's growing near the base of a tree, that's a red flag folks should look for. They're not typical looking portobello mushrooms you see in the grocery aisle. These are weird, funky looking things. It might be oozing stuff, you know. But that's definitely, it's a fruiting body of that greater pathogen that's underground. So it could be a symptom of a larger problem.
And if you've got mushrooms, because everybody has mushrooms in their lawn, and the fungus is there all the time. It just doesn't bear fruit all the time.
That's correct.
There's nothing you can do about that, right?
No, it's everywhere. It's on your shoes. It's everywhere in nature. And the big thing is, can that tree continue to fight it off? At some point in time, if a tree obtains root rot, there's a reason why. There was a wound, the tree maybe declined in health, and that fungus got a foothold and started to grow.
Mm-hmm. So the North Carolina Cooperative Extension Service says the best large wind-resistant trees for this area, I guess that means North Carolina, are live oaks, southern magnolia, and bald cypress. Smaller trees that do well include dogwoods, American holly, I think it's yaupon, is that it?
Yaupon holly, yeah.
Crepe myrtle, and sable palms. I didn't know they were native. I guess they are down along the coast.
Sure.
Live oaks were on that list. How deep are their roots?
Most trees do not have a deep tap root. Certain types of oaks, the live oak may have one deeper than others. Pine trees typically have a tap root, but the majority of all tree species' root system is within the first 18 to 36 inches in the soil.
Wow. So why are live oaks and the other trees that I read off, southern magnolia, bald cypress, why are they particularly good against high wind?
Most of those species evolved in locations that were hit with weather conditions like wind. Some of those are coastal species that wind is always blowing. So the tree grows in a way where it puts on extra wood in places during storm events that make it stronger to withstand future storm events.
And how does the live oak differ from all these pin oaks that we have everywhere that are cantankerous in the fall?
Live oaks generally are a little bit more resistant to urban conditions, disease, pathogens. They have more or less an evergreen component to it, where willow oaks, they drop their leaves in the fall.
So you can actually, I'm told, prepare a tree for heavy winds and hurricanes by the way you take care of it. Does the city do that? Are you going around through all the trees on public property and making sure they're as best as you possibly can, able to withstand high winds?
To the extent we can, yes. And you can structurally prune a tree to predispose it to better handle winds and other stresses. But we don't have the capacity to do that on the scale I wish we could, but we do some level of pruning.
But in fact, that's what you spend most of the money that you have at your disposal, isn't it? Doesn't it go toward maintenance and things like that?
Yes, it goes toward maintenance, and most of it's spent on the removal process of trees. Okay. When a tree needs to go, we'll identify and we'll put funding towards that.
So what can homeowners who have trees in their private property that you're not going to take care of, what can they do to make sure their trees can best withstand the wind?
The best thing they can do is watch their trees before, during, and after storms, and just note, if you want to keep a notebook, or just remember how that tree has looked over the years. And sometimes trees are weakened during storms, so after the storm,
how can you tell that?
You may see a broken branch, or you may see a tree that slightly is leaning a little bit. Maybe it's uplifting soil on the backside of that lean. Maybe a year later, you see mushrooms growing, indicating the tree has declined in health a little bit. Mm-hmm. Just be tree aware when you're looking at your trees. And if you have the resources, definitely use a certified arborist to take a look.
If you see a little uprise in the soil on one side of the tree, which means I guess the tree is leaning, what should you do? Should you take the tree down at that point before it falls on its own?
I would be concerned a little bit. I would definitely recommend contacting a company with certified arborists who could tell you, is that tree really leaning? Is that uplifting soil related to a lean, or is it related to abnormal root growth? Just so you have some peace of mind. Get a professional recommendation on what you should do.
And because we are so concerned about our tree canopy here, when you take down a tree, particularly an older big tree, are you supposed to plant a new one?
We encourage folks to. Trees provide so many benefits to the community, economically, socially, environmentally. But we also try to relay some right tree, right place thinking. So you don't want to plant a tree that will be a giant oak tree underneath power lines, because it's going to get whacked and it's going to look bad. And it's going to be trees that get hit hard by utility pruning are going to be more likely to have disease problems.
Well, so let's talk about that.
Okay.
Because there are a lot of trees. No, there are a lot of trees along rights of way, and I don't know whether they're on private property or whether they're on city property.
Sure.
But because the electric lines and telephone lines and cable are running on poles underneath the tree, they have really whacked these trees so that they get out of the way, so we don't have constant power outages.
Yes.
And the trees then begin to grow in a way that they are heavy on one side, it seems to me, but not the other.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't you setting those trees up to fall? Aren't we, not you personally, aren't we setting those trees up to fall? And you're the engineer, so jump in here, Mark.
Well, since Tim's thinking on that one, let me just point out, part of what we're dealing with in the community where we see that kind of pruning gets back to how utilities have been planned for and set up over a long period of growth. Increasingly, I think as we build projects and as development regulations influence how new things are built, there's much more awareness about the impacts of utilities and how they will interact with trees. So it affects what kinds of trees we're planting. It affects where utilities go. So the horizon looks better in terms of how we'll be able to manage for some of these conflicts over time, but it is truly difficult to deal with parts of our community where to bury lines is tremendously expensive, and we see the impacts of the pruning.
But there's no danger of these trees falling, because you literally can go down long tree-lined streets in some places, and you see absolutely no limbs on the street side because they've all been cut away for the power line.
Yeah.
Everything is on the other side. That seems to put the tree off balance to me.
It does, and it can. And so going forward, we try to avoid that. But it's a difficult challenge looking back at best practices that probably weren't as evolved as it could have been. We probably shouldn't have planted, or we didn't message out to the community, don't plant these types of trees here because you know, 30, 40 years down the road, we're going to have some problems. So it is a big challenge.
So I've read something yesterday. Experts say that it's tempting to cut off the top and side branches of a tree. We're kind of talking about this right now before a storm, but that will actually make the tree weaker and less likely to make it through wind storms. If you agree, why?
I do agree. So what happens if you top a tree where you cut the top off? That tree internally has a hormonal response. I'm getting into some really tree nerdy stuff here. So instead of growing up like a tree naturally wants to, it's going to start growing sideways and outward. And that's going to create really poor branch attachments, really poor structural form, which is going to leave that tree for future storms, future wind events. That growth is not going to be as strong as it would have been if you left it alone. So it's going to be more weaker in the future, and it won't be able to withstand wind and disease as best as it could have been if it was left alone.
Well, the city has experts like you. The city has equipment, heavy equipment, bucket trucks and things like that.
Sure.
And people who know how to climb trees and prune them properly. But aside from a property owner being able to deal with a crepe myrtle or a small maple tree or something like that, what do you do if you're a property owner and you have one of these towering oak trees? Can you personally do anything as you see it grow, or do you have to call, should you call, do people on a regular basis call certified arborists? Are we keeping up with our own property maintenance in terms of trees?
It's a good question. You know, we push trees so much, and they're so great. We're trying to improve our ability to communicate. After you plant the tree, think about it and take care of it. So when a tree gets really large, it can be very challenging physically to your average homeowner is not going to climb a tree or have access to a bucket or a lift. I don't recommend using a rental lift from Home Depot or something like that. So there really is a need to contact a professional, a certified arborist, to come out and help you determine what you need, give you a recommendation, and to try to take care of that thing throughout its life.
What should average homeowners be doing with the trees that they can handle, like a crepe myrtle or a maple or a dogwood or something like that? What should we be doing? What time of year should we be doing it?
Generally, it's best to prune and trim trees in the dormant season where it's, you know, winter here or early spring where the tree hasn't, you know, kicked back into its growing season. I would just, you know, try to prune any dead wood, any damaged, diseased, obvious dead stuff. You know, you can prune out with loppers, with a little handsaw. I don't recommend getting on a ladder. That's really a recipe for, you know, injury. So if you can get it from the ground with general hand tools, I recommend that.
Okay. A couple of questions about Bradford pears. Gordon on Facebook says, I read the city has already removed a number of Bradford pears that were nearing the ends of their lives. Has Florence impacted these trees more than other types like oaks? And are y'all, that's what he wrote, y'all, are y'all considering plans to expedite their removal? Meanwhile, Guy emails,
okay,
please tell the arborist to stop planting those god-awful Bradford pears.
Okay, I'll take the second one first. We heard you loud and clear. We're not doing that. We haven't been doing that for a long time. I really feel bad for whoever Mr. Bradford was, because he's the legacy of these pear trees are really going to hurt his name. But yes, Bradford pears were a go-to tree planting species 20, 30 years ago.
Because they're beautiful in the
spring. They're beautiful. They're very hardy. They can handle almost any urban stress. They're probably second to crepe myrtles as far as they can take a beating.
Yeah.
And the problem is, genetically, they grow in a way. The wood is very dense. It's very heavy. A lot of water in that wood. And when they grow and they get bigger, they can't handle their own stress, and they just fall apart, sometimes on a sunny day. So, yes, in the parts of Charlotte that were really built, growing 20, 30, 35 years ago, Bradford pears were planted everywhere. And those areas, we saw significant storm damage in.
Are you taking them out?
We are taking them out as best we can to balance it with other operational needs. But if we have any proactive ability to take those out, we'll work with communities in a cooperative way to take them out.
Replacing them with what?
Non-Bradford pear species. it varies by neighborhood. You know, we'll try to plant as many large canopy trees as we can, but we'll work with neighborhoods to figure out what works best for them.
Never had a guest be cagey about trees. our trees have been through lots of drought. We went through years of drought in this area. How has that impacted our trees? Can trees over time recover from the impact of long-term duration of drought? Because we had several summers where we didn't get the rain.
Yes, they can overcome, but drought hurts trees pretty bad.
What does it do to the tree?
It withholds that need of water to survive. So a tree will start shutting down, roots will start dying, mm-hmm. parts above ground will start dying. So the overall health and vigor of a tree will decline, and in the meantime, it's trying to fight off all the other challenges. So sometimes when you have multiple things working on a tree at once, that health level will decline and it will stay down over a period of years. And if conditions improve where that tree can bounce back, it may, but many times it can't. Things like cankerworms will come in, development, construction, some other type of pest may come in and keep it at a lower health level.
Well, let's talk about cankerworms, because we're famous for our cankerworms, particularly in certain parts of town. At least we were until this past year. They didn't show up with any great numbers. What was the impact on the trees in the years that they did show up, the lasting impact? Because we know they chew on the tree canopy. But and why didn't they show up this year? And are we done with them?
I'm not sure why they didn't show up. Our best guess is it's some climate-related thing, but we're not sure exactly why they didn't show up. And numbers have been going down.
Meaning that we had a hard freeze, too many hard freezes last winter, or that it's too hot for them to...
Could have been. We're not sure. Researchers aren't sure either. We've had some help over the years trying to pinpoint why we had so many, and now we have the opposite problem, so we're not sure. Cankerworms are similar to drought, probably less impactful, but cankerworms eat the leaves of trees, which are the life...
As their buddy.
Part of that life cycle. So trees need leaves to create that component of its life cycle to keep growing. So when you don't have that, those trees struggle. They have to put forth more energy reserves into growing leaves after these worms have, ate them all. So it kind of brings the tree's health down a peg, similar to drought. It'll drop it down, and the tree has to, fight back to recover.
Okay. Another thing that we're concerned about, and I know you are too as an engineer, that a lot of our trees have been here for a very long time. That's why they're so magnificent, and they are reaching the end of their lives. What does that mean for the future? How do we spot that in a tree before it's too late? And we'll talk about that with Tim Porter and Mike Davis when we come back at Charlotte Talks. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about our city's trees. We are the City of Trees. Tim Porter is the City of Trees arborist. Big job. Mike Davis is also here. He's the Director of Engineering and Property Management. He also deals with trees and removal and debris. And one of the things that you wanted to caution people about is that we do have a lot of debris from this storm, whether it's just leaves or small branches or large branches that have come down and the debris from trees that are being chopped up and sawed, people can't just throw that stuff on the curb.
Right. So, in a city, all kinds of things are related. And with Hurricane Florence, one of the things we were very fortunate really to have dodged a bullet on is the rain event that we got didn't really create two significant flooding issues for us, but it's something we're very concerned about. And one of the things that can really complicate how well our city can deal with floodwaters is whether or not it's cluttered with debris. Mm-hmm. So as we're now recovering in terms of getting trees chopped up and homeowners come out to deal with their own yards, we want to make sure that they're not putting material in the way of where stormwater needs to get into drains. So it's still helpful to the extent people can help remove sticks and debris that are around catch basins. That's where the stormwater goes. So just don't pile up your debris anywhere near those catch basins.
Okay.
That'd be great.
Before we get to disease and age and things like that, let me go through some emails that we've been getting. William emails, what changes has the city made in the last 10 years to periodically inspect for dangerous or structurally unsound trees?
We've increased our capacity, so we have more boots on the ground to do more inspections. We've also evolved and obtained the most technically advanced tools. So we have some advanced tools. We have a resistograph, which is a drill. We can drill into a tree
That doesn't hurt the tree?
It hurts it a little bit, but it'll tell us, is there any decay? Is that tree, the wood, still strong?
What are you, coring it? Is that what you're doing when you're doing it?
Yeah, it's a really tiny, thin drill bit that could be very long, and it'll drill into the tree, and the machine measures the resistance of the wood. So if it hits weak wood, it'll blow right through that, and we can tell that that's a problem area.
Okay. Kristen on Twitter, are willow oaks and pin oaks the same?
It's a good question. So yes and no. The yes part is willow oaks are the common name for that type of tree, and pin oak is another common name for willow oak. So yes, they're the same tree, but there's also technically two separate species. There's a willow oak and there's a pin oak. Pin oaks are not really native to this area.
Really?
But we call willow oaks pin oaks.
I see.
So I'm sure I just confused everybody there. So,
would you say then the majority of what we're calling pin oaks are actually willow oaks?
Yes,
in
thank
Charlotte.
You. That's exactly what I was trying to say.
Karen emails, what's the point of the gumball tree? And why do people let them grow to 100 plus feet and become engulfed in ivy?
The gumball trees are sweet gum trees. They're a native species that is very, it grows very well here. It's native. It grows up. It's one of the first trees to take hold in a site. And unfortunately, they drop a fruit that really hurts if you step on it. And we don't plant those trees. We only plant that type of tree if it's a fruitless variety. But it's very native. It's part of almost every forest patch we have in Charlotte. Okay. So it's hard to get away from those.
And she talked about the trees becoming covered in ivy. Isn't that a sign that the tree is unhealthy, or the ivy will certainly ultimately make the tree unhealthy?
Yeah, it can definitely impact a tree's health, the weight of the ivy. The ivy can actually get so bad where it grows and covers up the leaves of the tree, so it can out-compete that tree for sunlight.
And is the ivy taking advantage of the tree in some way, in terms of draining it of nutrition, or is it simply using it as a structure on which to grow?
It's basically using it as a structure to grow.
All right. Email from somebody anonymous. I live in the mountains of North Carolina. Why does it seem that we lose more pine trees here, even though my understanding is they have larger tap roots than the deciduous trees? Furthermore, deciduous trees have more leaf mass to get caught in the wind. However, on the trails, I seem to see more conifers on the ground.
I'm not sure. The anonymous person is correct. Pine trees usually have taproots or more taproots than deciduous trees, but I'm not sure why they're seeing more pine trees fall.
Well, I used to live in Columbia, and that's nothing but a pine forest where trees grow, and they're always falling down. Is it because they're tall and they just catch the wind in the right way?
Could be. I mean, the pine trees, they're evergreen, so it has that net that's catching wind all year round, so that could have part of a reason, too.
Are falling branches from a tree a sign that you're having problems with that tree, or is that just the natural tree shedding its dead limbage like a dog would shed hair?
It could be both. Parts of trees that are shaded out, as a tree gets bigger, lower branches might not see the sunlight they used to, so a tree will naturally kind of self-prune itself. But if branches are dropping, that could be a sign that there's something wrong underground, that the tree can't sustain that branch anymore.
And your office says that the number of falling trees in Charlotte has jumped 200% in the last 5 years. How many trees is that?
I don't have the number off the top of my head, Mike, but hundreds.
Are they falling? Why in the last 5 years? Do you have numbers that go back before the last 5 years to compare whether or not the number is increasing?
We have solid numbers going back to 2011, and it has been, unfortunately, a trend that's increasing, yes.
Why?
It's mainly the Bradford pears are part of it. Those trees are starting to explode and drop limbs, but it's related to this larger aging canopy issue, where we have many older areas in Charlotte that were planted 60 to 100 years ago with trees, mostly willow oaks, and they're aging out. So these trees provide massive benefits, but the trade-off is, as they get older, physically there's some public safety concerns we needed to start managing for very carefully.
We'll come back to that in a second, but you're the landscape guy here, Mike. We do have these old trees. It's those trees, the presence of those trees planted 100 years ago, are key to areas like Myers Park. and the older neighborhoods that surround the central core here. When those things start to go, and they will because everything dies over time, what does that do to our landscape, and how do you maintain it in such a way that the character of these areas does not change dramatically as these trees age out?
Sure. So, yeah, and I would even take it a step further to say that for some areas, it really defines what these neighbors
exactly
are
right.
and how people experience them.
I read a quote yesterday from somebody who lives in Myers Park that says, this neighborhood is here because of the trees. Actually, the neighborhood was there before the trees were planted, but nonetheless, right. today, that's the reality.
Right. That's right. And so, I've learned a lot from Tim and the work that we're doing as part of what's called the Urban Forestry Master Plan. And I think part of what people need to understand is we probably wouldn't be able to recreate that condition with new trees, even with all the right care and patience.
Over the course of another 100 years?
Help me with this, Tim, but sure. As I understand it, it's essentially that trees that now have to grow in what has become more of an urban condition mm-hmm. probably just can't achieve the same kind of height and canopy that we've come to appreciate now.
I think that's very possible. Another thing I would add is that some of these neighborhoods were designed when the horse and buggy was still a mode of travel. So there are vehicle transportation concerns now that weren't around 100 years ago. So, for example,
meaning that what? What does that mean?
It's really
horse and buggies are lighter than cars and trucks.
No, it's more about visibility, speeds of vehicles. So at Myers Park, part of the original design was bookending intersection, planting trees right on the corners of intersections, where today we need to have those sight triangles clear to make sure vehicles can see pedestrians and other vehicles. So we don't plant every tree back on a one-to-one basis, but we try to get as many back in as we can. And I would add, working with those neighborhoods is important, too.
Yeah, and if I could just jump in real quick, I think that is part of what we are trying to make sure we get right is understanding from a community perspective what's important. And clearly we know across the board, trees are important to Charlottesians. And so as we sort of transition into new generations of growth and development, we're going to have to both honor how people have valued trees and what that's looked like in the past while recognizing that conditions have changed.
So these neighborhoods that have these ancient trees, ancient by our standards, I guess, Myers Park, Dilworth, Greer Heights, Wilmore, Chantilly, Elizabeth, Wesley Heights, Belmont, Villa Heights, they're really old. I mean, we're talking 60 to 100 years old. What is the life cycle of a tree, and how do you know when it's time to euthanize it?
I would say those large willow oaks in those neighborhoods you just mentioned, I've counted the rings on some trees that are 95 to 105, so I know they're that old. 125 years for a willow oak in the Charlotte area is probably max capacity.
Wow.
Some can grow older. Certainly some don't make it that far. The urban conditions that we have now contribute to the health and the lifespan of those trees, maybe in a more
explain urban conditions again, because trees like carbon monoxide, don't they? Carbon dioxide. They soak it up.
To a point,
It's their life's breath.
Right.
So what is it about the urban environment today that makes life more stressful for these trees?
Some things we can pinpoint that are real indicators of the urban condition. Other things are more theoretical or anecdotal. So there's more air pollution now, and we see more droughts. We see much more construction now. So root systems are impacted. Canopies are trimmed harder during construction activity.
Soil volume. So as we're building, trying to accommodate everything that needs to go into the space around a tree with sidewalks and those underground utilities, anything else we mention, that's taking away some of the soil volume for those trees to
So is the city being proactive? Are we going through and taking out trees before they fall and cause property damage and loss of life? Or are we just hoping that we can keep these trees going for as long as possible because of the beauty they provide?
We're trying
to
do both. So we're being as proactive as possible to engage the community to really say, hey, if you see some problems, call us. And our inspection numbers have also climbed with the numbers of trees that are falling and being removed. So we were trying to keep trees as long as we can manage some level of acceptable risk. But we need to think first and foremost about public safety.
So if you're a property owner in those areas that I just mentioned or any place that has these older trees, what should you be doing at this point? Because the city's not going to come in and take your tree out for you. You're going to have to do it. That's a lot of money.
Yes. Again, as I said earlier, I think you should watch your trees, and if you have the resources to take care of it, definitely invest in that. In other areas, it's a big challenge. We're trying to, per our urban forestry master plan that Mike mentioned, we're trying to develop some programming that helps folks on the private property side. So folks who may be challenged to, spend a few hundred to a few thousand dollars to trim or remove a tree, we realize that we really want a healthy canopy that's robust, but it's a holistic thing. We need to manage those trees. And if we're pushing the community to do that, we want to help out in some way.
I've had experience with people who come through who are taking, somebody's hired them in the neighborhood to take down a tree or do some pruning, and they'll come and they'll say, your tree looks bad to me and I can take that limb off for $300. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now they're not arborists, are they? They're just guys.
They're a type of arborist, I would say. Yeah.
So from a homeowner's point of view, what would you say? Because Jessica in Gaston County emails, what can homeowners do to get tree work done that doesn't cost thousands of dollars? If you can have a tree limb or a tree adjusted, let's call it that, for a couple $100, are you wise to do that, or should you spend the money to hire a certified arborist and a crew to come out and do what you would think what you would do on the city's dime?
I would recommend doing the latter. Hire a professional who's skilled, who's certified, to give you an ethical, honest assessment of what the biggest concerns with your tree are. So you know if that money you're spending is really having an impact, and if you can get peace of mind. It's very valuable when it comes to trees.
Somebody said that your department can't keep up with the number of trees. We're losing more trees than we can replace. Is that true?
It's challenging to keep up with the number of aging trees, the trees out there that are quickly declining that need to be removed. So we're challenged with that. We are planting more trees than we ever have. So we're trying to find new ways to plant trees in all areas, not just public trees, street trees, but private property trees.
They say when they have those horrible forest fires, mm-hmm. particularly in California, that ultimately it's a good thing if it doesn't burn down houses and cause the loss of life. But it clears the forest floor of brush, which is hurting the trees' ability to get water. It clears the weaker trees out and opens up the canopy so that trees can get more sunshine. Is there a positive to the loss of some of these larger trees?
The positive is that we can come in with our current awareness and knowledge for urban forestry management and correct any poor planting or poor placement of trees that were under power lines or trees that did not really grow to full potential. We can come in now and right that wrong and plant something that really have the chance to grow and provide the most benefits as possible. But it's a big loss sometimes. You lose one tree, that could be 60 tons of wood, and it could be significant amount of benefits gone, mm-hmm. like that.
I don't know how much money your department gets, but I read yesterday, and I don't have the figures in front of me, that most of it goes toward removal and maintenance, and not so much towards planting. What if you had control over all the dollars, what would you be doing, and how much more money would you need?
I would really look to a multi-pronged approach to put resources to maintaining the canopy, removing trees if we need to, assessing those trees more proactively, planting back as much as we can, but also conserving. There's a great need to conserve some canopy in Charlotte, and we have some programs to do that, and we need to try to balance that and work with our community partners like Tree Charlotte and other folks to make sure there's a community-driven perspective on all fronts. Mm-hmm. So I would love to have more resources for all those programs.
Okay. Final question. I'm disappointed when a canopy tree is replaced by a crepe myrtle. They provide no shade, birds don't eat the berries and rarely nest in them, and the flowers aren't fragrant. Cherries are a much better choice. Would you agree?
Depends on the conditions, but cherries...
Quickly.
Yeah, I like cherries better than crepe myrtles, but crepe myrtles can almost take anything, so it's tough to make a
and
call.
Sean on Facebook says Tim Porter is awesome. The city's lucky to have him. Tim Porter is our guest. He's the city arborist. Congratulations for the comment. Most people don't get that. Mike Davis is the director of engineering and property management, also for the city of Charlotte. Also awesome. Thanks for joining us. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.